Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, and I'm back at it again with my fantastic co-host and business partner, mind you, Al McDonald. How are you doing today, Al?
I'm doing well, Robin, and looking forward again to having a great conversation. We get to do this on a regular basis, get to meet some great people, and today is no exception.
Well, I always like surprising Al because he was on vacation when I had my first chat with this person. We just had such a good conversation. I just told Al, I said, just show up, you'll enjoy this. So I think you're in for a treat, Al. Today, we're excited to be joined by Ryan Oliver, who is the CEO at Ampere. Ryan, welcome to the show. Good to see you again.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Well, Ryan, our first call was great, and you told me a little bit about your career and how that has now led you to Ampere, where you're making a powerful impact in rural, remote, and Indigenous communities. But you gave me a term the first time we spoke that I hadn't heard of before, so maybe you can talk about what is STEAM education?
Yeah, so Ampere is formerly known as the Pingwak Association. We were founded in about 2012 in Pangnirtung, Nunavut, which is where I lived at the time. So at the time, I was the senior advisor for cultural industries in the government of Nunavut. It was my job to develop policy for artists. Nunavut has an incredible artistic community, as well as filmmakers and the such. And so I was always heavily involved in the arts. And so, you know, at the same time growing up, I had had a lot of opportunities in computer science. And so STEAM is the natural extension of STEM. And whereas STEM is science, technology, engineering, and math, we really focus on STEAM as what we do as an organization, which just adds the arts piece. I think like at the end of the day, that doesn't just mean that we teach art. It means that the arts are a consideration in everything we do, like from everything from computer programming to the way we teach engineering to the way we teach science, because at the end of the day, everything around us is art. And by taking that more creative approach, it makes it more inclusive. It makes it more welcoming for anyone involved.
Well, you're one of the first people that we have spoken to that is doing what you're doing, probably the only person we've ever spoken to, which is awesome. Is why I wanted to have you on the podcast. But what sparked your interest for going down this path?
So I grew up in Lindsay, Ontario, which is a small town, about an hour 10, hour 20 out of Toronto. If traffic's bad, it's like closer to 2.5 hours. So, you know, mid-90s, I was obsessed with computers. We didn't have a television growing up. My parents, after we destroyed our first television, I think when I was 5 or 6, just didn't buy another one. They just bought a computer instead. And so it was something I always had. And in grade 9, had a teacher come in for a computer science class and just kind of lay out all these books and just say like, I don't understand any of this, but I know it's important. I know it's the future. And like, we'll figure this out together. And so for the 5 years I had of high school, being able to take different computer science courses with this same teacher, we basically got to make our own class. We got to figure out how this works. You know, this was the beginning of the internet. I would say like the very start of it in a lot of ways. And so it was a hacker culture in a lot of ways that we built this class around. And what was really, really cool was, I think probably I'm exaggerating by saying everyone, but let's just say almost every single person that was in that class went into the industry in one way or another. And the one exception to that was me, because my math marks weren't very good. I decided to become a storyteller. I went to film and television at Humber. And when I got accepted to Humber, it was an unconditional acceptance. So I stopped going to my math classes. And so I went to Humber, did film and television, quickly got kicked out of that, bounced around a whole pile of times. doing different things and ultimately found my way back into where the people I'd grown up with had ended up, which was just kind of at the forefront of what is an incredibly powerful and big tech industry in Canada and the games industry in particular. I often say, like, Lindsay's a community of about 23,000 people. It is a farm community by all means. But the people that have come just out of that one class have been involved in billions of dollars worth of tech production, whether it was being at the start of BlackBerry with Ubisoft, EA, Microsoft, all these companies that have set up bases here in Canada, just because we had a teacher that just came to us and just said, like, let's figure this out together. And that is really what computers have always been about, is like, is just break it and then fix it and figure it out.
You know, as you're telling that story, I'm thinking that could be like a cool series. Like, I can see it happening, actually, you know, a cool series on Netflix about, you know, at the beginning of the internet, this teacher who is very open-minded and gives people opportunity and the success that you see going forward. That is very cool. On our first call, did we happen to talk about our shared backgrounds in film?
I don't think so. No.
Okay. So the only thing I'll give away is David Cronenberg's Crash. That's the only clue I'm going to give away. But Ryan, we'll talk offline. I'll tell you a little bit about that because it's a fun story.
Okay, right on.
Ryan, I'm just interested in hearing a little bit more about this experience with the computer science teacher. And like, how do you think that impacted you specifically? Just being able to get into that environment where you basically, as you said, you got to design your own class.
Yeah.
What do you think the effect's been for you personally? And maybe can you connect the dots at all from that point to where you are right now?
Yeah. So from an education standpoint, so a big part of what we do is technology education. And I think like part of the reason so many people that came out of that class had so much success, myself included, is that it adapted to each other's learning styles in a way that was really useful. There are some people that work really well by sitting in a classroom for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours in a lecture, taking notes, and writing an essay. Most people, especially in computer science, don't function that way. They function by doing and function by, like I said, like breaking things, fixing them. You know, when you create a piece of software, when you program something, it is full of what are called variables, which is just things you can change to change the effects. And it's one of the first things we teach in a lot of our stuff is just like, you know, like, look at the speed is right now set at 1. What if you set it to 1,000? What if you set it to 100 million? What if you set it to negative 25? Because all the what ifs are really the way the world functions around us. It's, we live in this balance. We live in the balance that we've created. But what computers let you do, especially when it comes to storytelling, is tell a story that could be anything, that could reflect anything. And so it affected the way we taught from the very beginning. So when I was teaching the very first classes as a part of this in Pangnirtung Nunavut, it was with the same ethos of just like, okay, like let's figure out how we can make this work for your community. And for us as an organization, our buy-in, you know, anyone that wants to work with us at the end of the day, they do so because what we do is we prioritize what their needs for this is. There is no one size fits all in anything that we do. There isn't like a standard lecture that I will go into a community and give. It is back to that very first class I ever got to take, just like, what do you guys need? Like, how do we make this work for you? Technology can be like a really colonial force. And we work primarily in Indigenous communities and a lot of rural communities that have been subject to like some of the worst of colonization. And technology has a lot of those same markers, which is just like, there's one way we all do things. There is one format we'll all do things. And we try and break that just by saying like, how does your community need this? What do you guys need this for? And so we are adapting new lesson plans on the fly. We are co-developing lesson plans with people in community to make sure that what we do is not kind of a rote standard, that it is unique to every individual that we work with.
Okay, so maybe you've already started down the path of my next question, because I know your mission focuses on breaking down barriers to education in these diverse communities. So can you talk a little bit about how you generate some of these fresh ideas and strategies? And again, maybe you've talked about it already. It sounds like it might be more of a collaborative thing than simply you coming up with the idea and, you know, just, okay, here's what we're going to do. So can you just talk a little bit about how you come up with those ideas?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I did is live in the communities that we're serving. There's a long history of people coming into communities in Nunavut, for example, but any Indigenous community in Canada or even rural communities, Indigenous or not, with kind of the way to do things, with like, you know, this is the way we've always done it. And ergo, here's how we're going to continue to do it. And I think like when you actually have a stake in the success of a community, when you have a stake in like, you know, this has to work because it's going to affect my kids, because it's going to affect my neighbors, it's going to affect the people that like I care about and I love, then it matters so much more. I often will joke, like there's no interest like self-interest. And so like when it matters to the community that I care about, then you adapt to it. And so that's probably like the biggest thing, is just to make sure that like the people that we hire, the people that we work with, it does not mean you cannot be successful in this role if you don't live in an isolated community or in a rural community, right? But it does require an understanding that the very first thing you do whenever you're dealing with any underserved populations or equity deserving groups is listen. And you sit back and you do not pretend you have any of the answers, because often you don't. And using Nunavut again, like Inuit survived tens of thousands of years without my tech program. This is a nice bonus that I got to develop because it was something that got affected me. But there's a reason they survived. And I often, you know, I go back to like the Franklin voyages, for example. There's a reason the Franklin voyages didn't work out. And I always find it ironic we celebrate them, is because they didn't listen. They brought a library. They brought Westerly English foods. They brought all these other things. And as a result, they died and they're buried under the ice right now. And I think like it just goes back to these basic principles of like, if you're a guest, you listen and you grow from that and you grow out your ideas and kind of, you know, you understand what you can bring to the table. You understand the privilege that got you there. And then you just listen to where it can be used.
So a follow-on question then, if I may, can you maybe talk about with that approach, because it's a unique approach by the sounds of it. So biggest success and maybe sometime it didn't work out.
Yeah. I often think to myself and will say to my staff too, that like, if we ever look back on the year or two that just passed us and we're like, we did everything right, then we're not paying attention anymore. The nature of like the work we do and the nature of the communities we work in is one of constant evolution and constant growth. And so I would say the things that didn't work out are all over the place. I am littered with the learnings of my failings. And I think like that's led us to this point that allows me to like speak to the organization as we are right now. As a result, like some of the biggest successes, every day it seems like there's something new that just blows my mind. We just came out of a bit of an all staff and our chief of operations just provided an entire history to the staff on the colonial history of nonprofits and how nonprofits have been set up to maintain a colonial status quo. And there are moments in those meetings where I'm just like, we got here. We are talking to 100 people right now. We are creating an ethos for like how we want to grow this business that's rooted in a framework that is people first, that is community first, and that is a constant success. If you want a very specific example, I remain unbelievably humbled by the amount of times governments come to us or partners come to us and will speak to us and just say like, you guys know how to get into the communities. We can't. You know how to speak to them. And so can we give you these opportunities? And can we give you this funding pot, for example, to go administer it on our behalf? And so as a result, we're often like in this embarrassment of riches that we just get to hand out money to people because the government doesn't know how to get in there. The government doesn't have staff in there and the government doesn't know who needs it the most on the ground. And one thing I'm really proud of is the relationships we've built, make sure that we can uplevel the playing field by having those relationships. In terms of like a direct failure, like I said, it's been a constant thing. I think like the moments that I have felt the most overwhelmed are kind of twofold. One is when we take on too much, when we haven't grown to match the grown capacity wise to match the success that we're having. And there's a second one and I forgot it. But anyway, that's really the biggest, is those moments when we have so many opportunities and we want to do it all because it's so exciting and you can kind of see everyone cracking as they burn out. So trying to balance that piece. Yeah.
That's great. I appreciate that. And yeah, it's great to hear about obviously successes. And I'm glad that you acknowledge, and I'm sure that you feel this way. You probably learn a lot more from the times you fail, right? Than the times that you're successful. So, and I don't think we quite acknowledge that enough. So good for you for bringing that up.
Exactly. Ryan, I want to go back to something you said, because it made me think about this entire conversation and going back to our first conversation. But you said people coming in and saying, this is the way it's done. And then now government's coming back to you and saying, hey, we can't get in with the way it's always done. And I see that as opportunities that you're creating. What are you most curious about exploring to help further the mission of your company?
I think for me, the area that interests me the most, and I say this like as both a father of three and an employer of like over 100 people, is just is how we do this differently. This being the system we live in. The way we are going as a society is not going to leave much for my kids, is not going to leave much for my employees' kids, is not going to leave much for the kids that are coming in. You know, that's everything. So like we operate specifically as a nonprofit, but as a nonprofit that competes in every market and competes with the best of the best. I think there is like a standard expected of nonprofits, which is we'll be begging for handouts, we'll be grateful for every little scrap we get. The staff will always be underpaid, but you know, the mission will warm all our hearts and hopefully our children's beds because we won't be able to afford heat. And so the way I have always approached this organization and the way like I have always approached business is like, I do not have any incentive from like a shareholder capitalism approach to business. The idea that I'll be a millionaire in a couple of years and never have to work again doesn't interest me, like, because I don't see the value in that type of success. And so for me, the thing that is most interesting is how we exist within a system that is rooted in that, that is about kind of constant tax breaks for the richest, that is about celebrating the people that exploit their employees the best, versus celebrating the organizations that spread their impact and spread their wealth equally to ensure that like the people that are doing the hard work, and this is some of the hardest work on the planet. We go into communities that are affected by suicide, affected by food insecurity, pretty much at a level higher than anywhere in the world, not just Canada, but the world. And so when you exist in those communities, like how we make sure that what we do elevates everybody and that everyone can live without having to scrape by. That is the thing that I am the most excited about and the most curious about. And I think the thing that I spend the longest time thinking about is just like, how do we do this different? Relying on government grants is never going to be it. Government grants are just designed to get you from A to B, accomplish a government priority, and everyone gets about 60% of what they're actually worth. And so what are the other avenues where we can take a nonprofit model, take a like a social enterprise model, and genuinely change the way the economy works? And so, yeah, that's, I think, the thing that gets me the most excited. And, you know, I think I am in a very lucky position to be a CEO of an organization that's been around for 12 years, that has as many staff as I do. And it allows me to know that the good work we do day to day continues to happen while I get to sit back and reflect on wholesale democratic socialist change across the country.
Well, we should have given him a shout out at the beginning of the episode because we met through Russ McLeod.
Yeah.
How did I know you were going to say that?
Yeah, no kidding, Al. That's and Al knows exactly what's coming, but it's just, I remember the first time I spoke with Russ, I was off probably on another vacation because there's a theme here. But I remember talking and I said, oh, I have 10 minutes. I can, you know, as I'm going on the DVP, I can have a call. And we ended up speaking for an hour. I remember phoning Al and leaving a voicemail and saying, you've got to talk to this guy. And since then, we've had so many great conversations. We've become friends with him. And it just reinforces to me as I'm listening to you, and this is why I'm so glad we're having this conversation, that really good people know other really good people.
Yeah.
Because there's two prime examples, right? No, so I'm really happy you're doing this.
Thank you.
Al, I think we're not quite there yet. I'm getting excited because I'm already hearing the theme of the signature question, this answer, but I think you might have another one before we get there.
Yeah, I'm just curious if you were to look back now over your career journey, if there's maybe one lesson that you would like to share that maybe you wish you'd known at the start that would have helped you out.
Yeah, I think this maybe goes into the failures question that I didn't answer quite as well as I'd hoped, which is when I was thinking about that question, I was thinking about it from the perspective of the business. But if I think about it for myself personally and kind of the best learning lesson I ever got out of this, it was just to embrace failure at every turn. I went into film school at 18 years old, dropped out 4 months later. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, it was very quick going in. I was like, oh, I don't want to spend the rest of my life doing this. Then I worked at a pawn shop for 3 years. It was the second, like possibly actually over that one, the best thing to that moment that ever happened to me, because all of a sudden you are exposed to poverty and you are exposed to suffering and you are exposed to business in a way that you've never seen before. And that was my early 20s. And I ended up working with people with disabilities for years after that. And these moments where the attempts and the failures and the attempts and the failures, and the original name of our company is Bingwak, which means game in Inuktitut. And it means play and game in Inuktitut. And it was a big part of the ethos of this organization and remains that kind of what we want to do is going to be fun first and foremost. But the other thing that games do, and that taught me from a very young age, and that I was really excited as my kids got into games because I got to watch them go through the same experience, is you learn to fail really quick and to get back up and keep going. Because like you play any game, with a few exceptions, you're going to die a lot more than you live, but you'll get to the end and you'll see it. And the 800 deaths you had before don't matter anymore. What matters was that experience and everything you learned through that process. And I think like that ethos around what games can provide and around what we can do is just, yeah, like it is, I would be nowhere without those moments that were the hardest. And it's so much easier to say now. And I think you could even talk to a 20-year-old right now going through it and they would not give a shit. But it is those moments that are just the best to learn. I am grateful to come from like the struggles that we did to get to this point, because it's given me the perspective I think that I want to have right now, is to know it could disappear tomorrow, but also like to make sure that it's not just about me, that it's about kind of that community that we build.
Yeah. So for me, your games is my sports.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit of a love-hate relationship with sports right now, but the point is, especially for kids growing up, the one thing I do love about sports is, like you said, you fail a lot more than you win and you succeed. And you do have to get yourself up again and try again and try and figure it out. So yeah, I love that answer. So yeah, with no further ado then, and I think you've already talked about a lot of the stuff that you're doing, but I am hearing, or I'm curious as to what else you might have up your sleeve. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So your work naturally is creating a lasting impact on communities, but I'm very curious beyond this, what kind of broader legacy you hope to leave behind and how you envision the seeds that you're planting today shaping the future for these communities.
So for me personally, I am really struck by and kind of try to keep in mind an Indigenous principle of thinking forward seven generations, that anything we do, whether it's personally, as an organization, as individuals, whatever it is, as a collective, is for the betterment of the next seven generations to come. It needs to have an impact that lasts that long. And I am not deluded enough to think that like any individual thing that I'm going to do is going to have that lasting impact. But I think like it starts, if a community ultimately buys into it, if a community wants the stuff that we are working on, if a community asks for this, then that impact is far more likely to last those seven generations, because ultimately, it won't be about any one thing Ampere did as an organization or Pingwok did as an organization before that. It will be about the people in the organization we were able to influence and support to ensure those seven generations hit.
Well, like you said before, I think we need a big shout out for Russ, because this has been a great conversation and appreciate the introduction. I really enjoyed this today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Ryan, for listeners who are interested in learning more about what you're doing, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Yeah. So we have just rebranded as an organization, always existed at the Pingwok Association. And that made a lot of sense when it was me and Nunavut, as we are now a national organization with a national footprint, and really wanted to make sure that we were representing ourselves appropriately in the communities we are. So we are now Ampere. You can reach us as amp.ca, amp.ca. Shout out to the Alberta milk producers who gave us that domain name, which I'm forever grateful for, because it is so hard to get a good domain name these days.
It is.
Alberta milk production. I will drink your milk forever. Yeah, I think that's probably the best way through amp.ca, is you both see the day-to-day of what we're doing and as well as reach out through the forms there.
Okay, awesome. Well, that does it for today's episode. I think you can tell Al and I really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or join the conversation on LinkedIn. We've seen it here. Success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.